Anyway, tonight is Parashat Bo, and it's always very good, you know, when things sort of coincide. So we've got Parashat HaChodesh in this week's Sedra, the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, and tonight's Rosh Chodesh. So the two coincide very nicely. And actually, even though there's quite a lot in this week's Parashat, there's the last three plagues, there's the mitzvah of Korban Pesach and HaChodesh HaZelachem, and then there's also Yetziat Mitzrayim, and then at the very end, we've got the memorials to Yetziat Mitzrayim and the mitzvah of Tefillin. I want to focus this evening really just on one part of the parasha, what's labelled as Perek Yud Bet, chapter 12, the mitzvah of Chodesh HaZelachem, and some of the mitzvot to do with the Korban Pesach. We'll see a number of themes with that regard. So I want to start off right at the beginning of that. That's Parsha. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe and Aaron. He tells them, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. This month shall be for you as the first of months. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodesh HaShanah. It's the first of the months of the year. And the Ramban, who I think we've seen on previous occasions, speaks about the importance of having, counting the months from Nisan. That's to emphasize the fact that Yetziat Mitzrayim is so important to us, just like we count the days of the week from, according to Maaseh Bereishit. So we count the months of the year according to Yetziat Mitzrayim. And these are the key themes in the Jewish consciousness. Now, the way most of the Mefarshim understand it is that this mitzvah HaKodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim is a command to the Jewish people about how to be Mekadesh the Chodesh, how to sanctify it, and to know that it's Rosh Chodesh. Rashi says HaKodesh Hazeh Herehu Levana B'chidusha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu, we haven't got this on the page in front of us, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the new moon, va'amar lo, and said to him, k'shayareach mitchadesh, that's when the moon is renewed, yelecha rosh chodesh, it will be rosh chodesh. And he goes on to say, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu had a little bit of trouble understanding exactly, you know, the size of the moon, the shape of the moon, etc. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him the moon in the sky. V'amar lo, and said to him, Kazeh re'ei v'kadesh. When you see this, then you'll mekadesh it. And we know from the sugyas in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that, you know, in temple times, that's how they were mekadesh the month. They had witnesses. When they saw the new moon, the witnesses would rush to Yerushalayim. Even on Shabbat, they would rush to Yerushalayim, they'd be Mechalel Shabbat if necessary, and they'd come, and they'd testify in front of Beit Din. Beit Din would ask them various probing questions, and on the basis of that testimony, Beit Din would say, Mekudash, Mekudash, they would declare that the month has been sanctified, and that it's Rosh Chodesh. So we see this notion of Kiddush HaChodesh as being very important, and the testimony of the Edim and the whole process of the Rambam, it's in Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, you know, really explains that, you know, all the dinim, etc., etc. It's interesting to find a passage in Rabbeinu Bechaya, one of the Rishonim, who discusses this with a very different approach. Let's see what Rabbeinu Bechaya says. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, "V'inyan haChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim." What's this Rosh Chodashim got to do with things? Ein kavanat haKatuv lahazhir otanu la'aber shanim v'likboa chodashim al pi re'iyat halavana. It's not telling us that the way we calculate the months and the years is according to how we see the moon in the sky. Ki bikviyut haChodashim. Ein ikar b'Torah lachush liriat halavana. Big chiddush he's telling us here. That's as far as fixing the months is concerned, there's ein ikar b'Torah. There's no principle in the Torah which is telling us that we need to see the moon. Im tire mutav, im lo tire biyom hakviut. That's alakodem lachinu achareichein. If you see it the correct time, all well and good, but if you don't see it when you expect to, you see it before or afterwards, yom or yomayim, a day or two out, ein anu choshishim, that's no problem for us. Ki lo nitztavinu b'toralik b'chodashim al pi riyat alvana. The psukim, it's true, the psukim don't mention anything about seeing the moon. There's no requirement from the Torah to see the moon in order to fix Rosh Chodesh. Kim al piach hespon, it's all according to calculation. So this is a very radical position, because we always believe that from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu till Mishnaic times, there was Kiddush al pi ha-re'iyah. They sanctified the new month according to witnesses coming. Then, for all sorts of various reasons, a fixed calendar was put into place, and the Kiddush al pi ha-re'iyah fell by the wayside. And then subsequently, or in the future, that's when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, then we'll revert to Kiddush al pi ha-re'iyah. Rabbeinu B'chai is saying, that's not the case at all. It was always, it's the mitzvah, nothing to do with seeing the moon. The mitzvah is that you've got to work out when Rosh Chodesh is. Do your astronomical calculations, and you can find out when Rosh Chodesh is, irrespective of when the moon is seen. The Katav Rabbeinu Chananel Zichrono Livracha. Now he's quoting Rabbeinu Chananel. The particularly interesting thing is, if you look at the Mosad Harav Kook edition of Rabbeinu B'chai with its annotated text, he points out this is not only the view of Rabbeinu Chananel, but it's also the view of Rav Sadia Gaon. So Rav Sadia Gaon wrote a Peirush on Chumash, but only fragments of it remain. But this is essentially quoting Rav Sadia Gaon, and in its fullest sense, so filling in some of the gaps that we don't actually have. But if anything that's traced back to Rav Sadia Gaon is going back a very long time and is a very authoritative, you know, position. That's Rav Sadia Gaon wasn't called Gaon for nothing. So it's not just a random chiddush of Rabbeinu B'chaya, but this is the position of earlier authorities as well. What did Rabbeinu Chananel say? Kviyut HaChodashim, Eino Ela Al Pi HaCheshbon, Lo Al Pi Re'iyat Halvana. So Rabbeinu Chananel and Rav Sadia are saying that the way you fix the months is almost nothing to do with seeing the moon, but it's Al Pi HaCheshbon, it's according to calculations. How do we know that? We can bring a proof. The whole 40 years that the Jewish people were in the Midbar, they were covered during the day by the clouds, by the clouds, the Anan HaKavod, and at night they were covered by Amud HaEsh, a pillar of fire. They never saw the sun during the day, or the moon at night. Now, I know that we have this notion of the Anane HaKavod, seven Anane HaKavod, six surrounded them like a box, and the seventh one went in front of them. I'd never really given it a lot of thought, but it had never occurred to me that, of course, once they're inside that box, they never see anything that's going on outside. That's what Rabbeinu Chananel is saying. They traveled for 40 years in a box, and they couldn't see the sun, the sky, the moon, or anything. So how could they do Kiddush Halvana? V'ushamar katuv, v'atab rachamech harabim, lo azavtam b'amidbar, et ha'amud ha'anan lo somay alehem b'yomam, lan chotam b'haderech, v'et ha'amud ha'esh b'alayla l'ha'ir lahem. The pasuk in Nehemiah saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, always protected them with the cloud and with the fire. So how could they have ever fixed the months in the time of the Midbar according to when they saw the moon? It has to be that the main mitzvah, primary mitzvah, is al pi acheshbon. It's according to the calculations. Kol Yisrael, and this is how things always happened. Likbar chodashim al pi acheshbon. For 1,100 years from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't worry about the moon. they are worried about the Cheshbon. Till the time of Antigonus, and Antigonus had two Talmidim, he had many Talmidim, but amongst his Talmidim were two, called Tzaduk and Baitus. These are important names, because often in the Gemara we have reference to the Tzadukim. The Tzadukim are the Sadducees, and Baitusim are the Bethusians, disciples of Baitus. And Tzaduk and Baitus were sectarians. They were essentially, they were apikorsim. They didn't accept, they certainly didn't accept the oral tradition, the Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's Uchshedarash Lahem, Altiuka Vadim HaMishamshin Et Harava Manat Lekabel Pras. When he darshan to them this notion of you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any expectation of a reward, Niknas Safet B'liban V'chashu She'in On Neshuscha, they came to the erroneous conclusion there's no reward and punishment in Jewish tradition. V'yatzu L'Tarbut Ra'ah, and they went off the derech in terms of belief in Torah. And one of the first questions they, first spanners they threw into the works was about the Kviyut HaYareach, the fixing the months and the moon. They said the main mitzvah isn't anything to do with the Cheshbon, Kiyim Biriyat HaLevana, that you have to see the moon. And that is the most accurate way. And therefore, the Chachamim had to dispute that, and to prove to them that wasn't the case. Rabban Gamliel said, according to Rabban Gamliel, seeing the moon isn't so critical. The Cheshbon, the calculation is the essence. Kach mekublanim beit Abiyava, this is the tradition I have, she'en chidusha shel vana p'chuta mikaft et yom mechtav tash tzag chalakim. That a month, the new moon is visible every 29 and a half days and 793 chalakim. Ve'en ei dvarav halalu mochichin shelo haya Rabban Gamliel somech al riyat halvana kiyem al cheshbon. So it shows that Rabban Gamliel was more concerned with the Cheshbon than actually seeing the moon. Now, the only problem, the first thing is that this passage in Rabbeinu Bachai is very interesting, just because it goes against everything that we've sort of learned.
We don't need 2 days of Rosh Chodesh then, because you always know which.
Okay, that would be consideration. But beyond that, you know, it's clear from the from the Mishnayot, it seems very clear that. Sorry?
Heard of a second Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, that, you know, this was. You know, they were always being the Kaddish al-pi hara'iyah. That's so, you know, how are we going to square that with Rabbeinu Bachaya? That's especially as, you know, it indicates very clearly that in, you know, times in the Beit HaMikdash, they were Mekadosh al-pi hara'iyah. All these discussions about, you know, in the Beit HaMikdash, you know, the Aiden came late in the afternoon and they weren't sure that's, you know, which day is going to be Rosh Chodesh, etc., etc. So how do we square the circle? Because, you know, it's clear from other texts that they were being Mekadosh al-pi hara'iyah. So I think the answer to the question is that the two went in tandem. There was Kiddush al-pi hara'iyah in terms of Aidim did come and testify about the moon. But in the event that that wasn't happening, you still had the Cheshbon. The most blatant example of that, of course, is that in every case, if the Aidim didn't come on the night of the 30th, right, or nobody saw the moon on the night of the 30th, so necessarily the next day, i.e. the 31st, was going to be Rosh Chodesh. There was no such thing as a month which was more than 30 days. There was no such thing as a month which was, you know, 42 days till somebody eventually saw the moon. That's, you know, so they were tied down to the Cheshbon. And it's also clear from Gemara's in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that if the sighting of the moon didn't tally with what their cheshbon was, then they would ignore the witnesses. So if the witnesses, if the Beit Din knew that there wasn't supposed to be a moon tonight, right? Tonight's the 30th of the last month. It's 30th night of Tevet. I mean, we know tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, so we call it already the 1st of Shvat. Essentially, it's the 30th of Tevet. So if Chazal knew that the Beit Din knew that there was not supposed to be a moon tonight, it wasn't supposed to appear till tomorrow night, and Adim came tonight, they would say they'd seen the moon tonight, which of course was impossible, right? Because astronomically there was no moon. So they would ask them, you know, questions that would cause them to contradict themselves and to disqualify their agent. Because they obviously weren't going to, you know, be Mekadesh al pi ha-ra'iyah when it wasn't accurate and it wasn't correct. But the point that the main point that Rabbeinu Bachai is making is that the Ikar is the fixed calendar, or the cheshbon. You know, how far in advance it was formulated in those days, I don't know. It might have just been on a monthly basis. They worked out, you know, from one month to the next. Maybe they had a calendar for, you know, for a year in advance. They certainly didn't have a computer program they could, you know, plug it all into and get the answer. But certainly Rabbeinu Bachai is moving the emphasis right away from the Kiddush al pi ha-ra'iyah, and say the Ikar was the Cheshbon, as opposed to the other Mefarshim, particularly the Rambam, who indicate very clearly that the Cheshbon was only brought in once the Re'iyah could no longer be relied on. But once we can go back to the Re'iyah, then that'll be you know, that'll be brilliant. Whereas Rabbeinu Bachai sees no need for that. It might be that he'll, the times of Beit HaMikdash will still have Adim come. Because if you can use the Adim as well, that's, you know, then all well and good. But not that there's really any biblical requirement for it whatsoever. Tanya, you had a question?
Just in terms of, obviously, one of the other questions that might come up is 2 days Yontif. If you have it all worked out, the principle behind why there was originally 2 days Yontif becomes a challenge for this concept that it was always coming. Because if you could have a calculation which you could rely on more than the ability for it to get to Chutz La'aretz, technically, then surely that would have obviated the need.
It's not
that debate, it's just a question of how does Rabbeinu Bachai actually square that circle for himself in terms of the factor that there's still Chutz La'aretz 2 days. If they had this.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. I suppose one answer could be that, you know, it depends where the cheshbon was worked out. If the cheshbon was worked out locally, you know, in Yerushalayim, so, you know, they might, you know, on a monthly basis, then maybe the information hasn't come through, you know, filtered through yet. The other question would be that there could still be a certain amount of discrepancy in the sense that, you know, for example, you know, they wanted to avoid, you know, Rosh Hashanah falling on particular days of the week, Yom Kippur falling on particular days of the week, etc. But you're asking a good question. It's a good kasha. That's okay.
Super modern.
Yeah, it's a good kasha, and it's not without its challenges, this position, but it's worth flagging up because it's so radically different from what we're used to. Okay, let's go on to the Korban Pesach. So Bnei Israel had to separate the Korban Pesach. Pesach Mitzrayim had certain dinim that didn't apply to Pesach Dorot, meaning that the way the Korban Pesach was selected and offered up when that first Pesach in Mitzrayim was a little bit different to the way it was offered up in subsequent years. For example, Pesach Mitzrayim, I had to sit there, Motnechem Chakurim Na'alechem Raglechem, dressed up, ready to leave Mitzrayim. Nobody suggests that in subsequent years, when you ate the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim, you had to dress up as if you were going to eat the Korban Pesach. Nowadays, some people like to dress up at the Seder table. That's, you know, as if they're leaving Mitzrayim. That's one time I think we needed to borrow something on Seder night, and one of my kids went and knocked on a neighbor's door, and the balabite came to the door. He was dressed up as Paro. That's, which I can understand, sort of dressing up, you know, on Seder. Dress up like an Israelite. That's, don't dress up like Paro. That's,
presumably his timing wasn't that unfortunate that he thought that.
No. That's what I think. They might have just been up to Kol Dichvin Yetev Yechol, though. The invitation. Oh, we've got another guest at the table. That, in any event, amongst the mitzvot that applied, and applied for Pesach Dorot as well, is in Pasuk Tet, Al Toklu Mimenuna, don't eat from it undercooked, Vashel Mevushal Bamayim, or boiled in water. Kim Tzliesh, it has to be roasted on the fire. Rosho al Kra'av al Kirbo, its head with its legs and with its innards. Velo Totiru Menu ad Boker, and don't leave any over from it till the morning. Vanotami Menu ad Boker by Ishtis Rofu. And anything that's left over, that's till the morning, by Ishtis Rofu. That's, you have to burn in fire. Now we've got here negative mitzvahs and positive mitzvahs. How many negative mitzvot do we have here?
Two.
That's Al Tochlu Mimenu Na Uvashel Mevushal Bamayim. So not to eat it from it undercooked or cooked in water. There could be two mitzvot or one mitzvah. Doesn't really matter. And then our other one is Lototiru Menu, not to leave out any over. What linguistically is the big difference between those two negative mitzvot? That's the first mitzvah is Al Tochlu Mimenu Na, whereas the second mitzvah is Velototiru Mimenu. Now, what's the difference between al and lo? That's our question. What's the difference between these two terms? Are they synonymous, or is there a significant difference between the two? So let's look at the Meshech Chochma, who makes an interesting observation and then explanation. You should know. This is the difference between al and lo. Ki al hu inyan bakasha. When you say al, that's more of a request. You're saying it nicely. Kamoshe matzanu minat na samuch la al. Very often you find the term na, which means please, that's in conjunction with the word al. That, but he goes on to say that you never find the word na together with law, because law is more of an instruction rather than a request. So we could say simply that al is a more gentle term that's rather than law being a much stronger term. As in English, it's very difficult to translate it, you know, significantly differently. You know, in the English, we've got that you shall not eat, you shall not leave over. It's translated both, you know, exactly the same. I suppose if we wanted to show the nuance, we would perhaps translate al tochlu mimenu naz, please don't. Whereas lo totiru mimenu aboke means don't. And the question is, why have we got this difference? Why is the mitzvah not to eat it undercooked a gentle mitzvah, whereas the mitzvah not to leave any over is a much more aggressive mitzvah? That's the question. So if we look in the second paragraph, the Meshech Chochma explains why we've got this difference. V'nei terim hikar shem kol b'chor b'mitzrayim. Before Hashem struck every b'chor, every firstborn in Mitzrayim, Halo az hayu hamitzriim choshvim shezeh inyan mitachpulot Moshe. The Mitzriim just thought this was another of Moshe Rabbeinu's tricks. You know, he's driven them mad for the past 11 months, and he's still driving them mad about the things he says he's going to do. Kamo shamru az matay yezel an mokesh. How much longer is he going to be a snare for us? Ulam, however, ba'eti kashem kol b'chol, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu smote all the firstborn, ra'u ha'kol ki ashkacha pratiyot me'akol el kol ha'shleimut. They saw the extent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha pratit, how much he's involved with what's going on. Kevan shashkacha chala b'frati pratiyot, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha became relevant to every detail of things. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to discern exactly who in Mitzrayim was the firstborn and who wasn't. Tedaki yashkif Hashem vayakom mefal kol mitzad, v'az dibuk kinyan ha'eloki ba'am Yisrael, shu ben b'choro. And it was at that point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this awareness of everything that was going on. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this Kinyan Eloki Ba'am Yisrael. It means he took the Jewish people as his people. The Kana'o Tamla Avadim, not just as people, but as slaves. With Yitziat Mitzrayim, we became slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki Paro v'chol ha'am maharu l'shalcha min ha'aretz. Paro and the Egyptians wanted to kick Bnei Israel out. V'chiyuv kol ha'mitzvot tala Hashem yitbarach ba'et hazot. And it was at that point that the Jewish people became bound by mitzvot. Now, of course, mitzvot weren't given in their entirety until Matan Torah. But what he's saying is there was a big change. Prior to Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Jewish people weren't yet taken as God's people and weren't yet bound to him by the mitzvot. They weren't yet his servants. Whereas, when God redeemed the Jewish people, they became his servants. Lachein amar, therefore it says, Al tochlu mimenu na, please don't eat from it raw. Perush mi ba'od yom gam kein perush, meaning, rak b'lashon bakasha, meaning that when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say this to them? When did this apply? This applied mi ba'od yom, when they were eating the Korban Pesach, right? Before they were released. Shas hayahi kar me'am Yisrael, she'aminu b'Hashem yitbarach, v'achlu tzli derech tzrara v'chipazonu maklam b'yadam. They needed to eat it roast to show that they believed that they were going to be taken out of Mitzrayim. V'aminu b'Hashem she'yotziyam b'dero ha'nituyah. So they ate it roast as if they were royal people and wealthy people who can eat roast meat. V'zeh l'shon al derech bakasha. That's asking them to do something. But after midnight, when you've got this, all the Egyptians have cried out, and the Jews are sent free, and the first Egyptian firstborn died. That uses the term law, which means this is the way you've got to do it. So basically what the Meshech Chochmah is saying is these two mitzvot applied at two different times. Al tochlu mimenu na uvashem uvushal b'mayim. That was prior to the Exodus. Lo tochlu mimenu ad boker is subsequent to the Exodus. And the Jewish people's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was different before and after the Exodus. Before the Exodus, we weren't avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, it's al. It's a request. We didn't have to do it. I mean, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu requests things, it's probably good to try and do it, which is probably a pointer for us in our lives. Right? After Mitzrayim, after Bnei Israel were released, so then they had to do it. And therefore, it uses Lashon Law. Okay, so that's a technical difference between those two Lashonot. Let's turn the page and come up with a very useful Dvar Torah for the Seder table. I said last week that these Sidrot are useful because if we remember things, then we've got Divrei Torah for the Seder. It's only 10 weeks now till Pesach.
I hope you
use
that as your opening
Russia for the Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Okay. I need to rush home just to tell my wife to start cleaning. I think the response will be, you start cleaning. So the pasuk says the blood will be as a sign on the houses where you're there. And I'll see the blood and I will pass over you. There's a machloket in Chazal as to whether the blood was painted on the inside or the outside of the doors. In all the pictures, it's on the outside, but according to some authorities, it was on the inside. V'lo yevachem negev l'mashchit, and there will be no plague to destroy you, b'hakoti b'eretz Yisrael, when I smite the people of the land of Egypt. Look at the question asked by the Beit HaLevi. What does the Beit HaLevi say? The Beit HaLevi says, "V'ra'iti et adam v'fasachti v'lo yevachem mashkit negev l'mashkit b'hakoti b'eretz Yisrael." V'chein l'kaman. Further on, we've also got a pasuk which says, "V'lo yitein mashkit l'avoy b'atichem l'ngof." Kadosh Baruch Hu won't let the destructive force come into your houses to destroy you. V'nei yadua drashat chazal. There's a drashav chazal that we say at the Seder table. V'avarti, and I will pass through the land of Mitzrayim. Ani v'lo hamalach. It will be me rather than any angel. V'keti, ani v'lo hashaliach. That, and I will smite me and not the shaliach. We say this in the Haggadah. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'kvodo v'atzmo, who smote the firstborn, and not a mashchit. A mashchit is a force of destruction. It's translated as a plague, a destructive force. The question of the Beit HaLevi is, if the pasuk's talking about the mashchit, a destructive force, whereas according to Chazal, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself who came through Mitzrayim. So what's going on? Rakiv ticham al shnei dvareim. So the Beit HaLevi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising them two things. Echad, number one, was ufasachti aleichem, I will pass over you. Hainu le'inyan ikah makat b'chorot. That means, that's talking about the main thrust of makat b'chorot. Tahaya al yidei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzmo. That was carried out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. That's why it says, I will pass over you. I'm going round Mitzrayim, and I will pass over you. Shenit, the second thing is, Da'alideh hakat b'chorim, na'aseh sham magifa gedola mehasirachon ume'ipush ha'avir, alideh b'chorim shemetu. I don't know how many Egyptian firstborn died that night, but there was a lot. If you think about, you know, tens of thousands of corpses around, that's going to be a very unhealthy environment. And there's going to be immediately a lot of disease around. And that is the mashchit. There were lots of people died as a result of that, those infections which were now around because of the dead bodies. And therefore, lots of Egyptians died. That's how there was no household without a dead person there. Even if there was no bechor, nevertheless, people still died because of the germs in the air from all the dead and decaying bodies. And that was the mashchit. So we've got two things. You've got the death of the firstborn, that was by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then you've got the death by infection or plague, and that was the mashchit. That's why they were then told, don't worry, you're obviously not going to get harmed by me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to kill the firstborn of Am Yisrael. But you should know, even the airborne disease isn't going to affect you either. The Negev, the plague that will be a result of Makat Bechorim, isn't going to affect you at all. And he goes on to say that this is referenced, you know, in the Mizpah when we say Namakim Yitzrayim Bivchoreihem. Okay, Kilolam Chasol. We praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for smiting Egypt Bivchoreihem with their firstborn. Now it's a question, you know, what does it mean that the Makay Bechorei Mitzrayim? It could be we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the one who smote the firstborn of Egypt. But in actual fact, in the pasuk it says, the Makay Mitzrayim who smote Egypt Bivchoreihem with their firstborn. So what does that mean? So the Beit HaLevi is saying what it means is Mitzrayim also suffered through the death of the firstborn by the infection that was carried, that's from all these dead bodies. I don't know if our medical expert can give us, some thoughts, but you've got vast numbers of dead bodies in the Egyptian heat, even if it's at night time, that infection starts travelling fairly quickly. Okay. We've got a medical medical affirmation of this. Thank you.
I've not been consulted on it before in the NHS.
Right. Soon. Well, there are other problems in the NHS besides Makat Bechorot. Yes, that's so. That's a very interesting answer that he gives. Okay, that we've got two things here. We've got the Makat Bechorot. And then we've also got the mashchit, the airborne disease, which comes as a result of having so many corpses around. The Vilna Gaon also asks this question, and he gives a different answer. He says that the Makat Bechorot was obviously that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What was the mashchit? He says the mashchit is normal death toll, the normal roll of the Malach HaMavet. He says you've got 600,000 male Jews in Mitzrayim over the age of between the ages of 20 and 60. I mean, you know, we say usually, you know, there were that's 3 million people left Mitzrayim. 3 million Jews left Mitzrayim. Right? So, out of 3 million population of 3 million, any given night you're going to have a certain number of people die. That's I don't know how London's what 9 or 10 million. So I don't know how many people die in London every night. No idea. But, in the hundreds, we would think. That's in the hundreds every night? Goodness, that's a lot. That's, let's call it 100, even. Okay, in the hundreds. So, you know, you're going to have a couple of hundred, you know, Jews in Mitzrayim expected to die that night of so-called natural causes. For lo yitain hamashchit, the miracle of, according to the Vilna Gaon, the miracle of that night was that even the mashchit didn't have a rashut to cause any harm in Israelite homes on that night. So that night, Lel Shimurim, that's not only were the Jewish people protected from the supernatural forces of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming round and smiting Bechorei Mitzrayim, but they were also protected from what we call the natural causes of death as well, and there was simply no death amongst the Israelites on that night. Let's leave the next Meshech Chochma and turn a page to a Beit HaLevi, which maybe we'll say this Beit HaLevi outside, but okay, we'll look at talk it through. Maybe some of it inside, some of it outside. He's referring us to a passage in the Haggadah that ties in with this week's parasha, but particularly brought it because it appears in the Beit HaLevi in this week's parasha. We've got the story of the five rabbis in Bnei Brak. And then that's followed by a Mishnah from Masechet Brachot. It's one of the, I think I've pointed out on number of occasions with our Pesach Shiurim, you know, that the Haggadah is a learning experience. You're learning Mishnayot and Braitot and Ma'amarei Chazal. That's what it is. So we've got the Mishnah We've got the mission of Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Hare ani kaven shim v'mishana. V'lo zachiti shetam ha'etzi ha'mitzrayim balenot. Ad shedra asha ben zoma. I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. He said, I'm as if I'm 70 years old. Okay, he was only 18, but he had a long white beard. And he said, I never managed to convince the Chachamim that Yetziat Mitzrayim has to be mentioned every night. That's Anshid Rasha Ben Zoma, until Ben Zoma came along and explained it. What does the pasuk say? Mantis quote Yom Seit Chachamim Mitzrayim kol Yomei Chayecha. Ben Zoma darshened it. Yomei Chayecha Yamim kol Yomei Chayecha Halelot. So Yomei Chayecha means the days, and the kol tells you at night. That's so fine. So the Beit HaLevi asks two questions. His first question is, seeing as this is a drasha, nothing to do with Seder night, it's a drasha to do with mentioning it's Yom Mitzrayim throughout the year, why are we talking about it on Seder night? Various things we do to do with Yom Mitzrayim the whole year. We later fill in, according to the Pesukim in this week's parasha, to remind us of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We don't have an exposition on tefillin at the Seder night. Why do we have an exposition on this? So, okay, he answers that question. We're not going to, and he ties it in with what we see now, but we're not going to worry about that. His other question, his more fundamental question is, if Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria never managed to convince the Chachamim that you say, speak about Yetziat Mitzrayim at night, till Ben Zoma darshened it from Kol Yomei Chayecha, till that point in time, what motivated Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria to say that you do mention Yetziat Mitzrayim Balelot? Clearly, till Ben Zoma came along and said that, use the word Kol, and that'll teach you to do it at night. Where did Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria get the notion from that you have to mention Yetziat Mitzrayim at night? If he's not using the word kol, then what is he using? That's the question that the Beit HaLevi asks. So let's see what his answer is. Look three lines down. Right, Yesh lo mativim sechet brachot nechleku Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria vi Rabbi Akiva b'mitzvah achilat Pesach. Now, Masechet Brachot, in the first paragraph, there's a machloket tanaim between Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, same person that we're dealing with here, and Rabbi Akiva, as far as the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach is concerned. Imu kol halaylo ad chatzot. Is it the whole night long? You can eat Korban Pesach the whole night long, or can you only eat it till chatzot, till midnight? Now, we paskin that you have to eat it by midnight, but we don't know whether that's a machloket, whether or not that's a din from the Torah, or whether it's just a siag, a geder, so that you don't, if you say you can eat it any time during the night, we're worried that the person, okay, you know what, I don't like eating meat at night, I'll get up earlier than what I prefer, roast lamb for breakfast. I'll get up early and have an early breakfast, and they'll turn out that actually they didn't eat it at night, they didn't get it finished in time, and they left some over. So Chazal said that you have to eat it by midnight. But in principle, there's a machloket, whether you have to eat it by midnight or you've got the whole night. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria savar ad chatzot. Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria says you have to eat it by midnight. Rabbi Akiva sura leikol halayla, whereas Rabbi Akiva says the whole night long. Vamrinan sham. And the Gemara says, now everybody agrees that the Israelites were redeemed at night. Paro gave them Rashut to go, that was at night. When he said, get out of here, that was at night. When did they actually leave? They didn't leave till the morning. Lo nechleku, what's our machloket about? So everybody agrees they were given rashut at night. Something happened in the middle of the night. And everybody agrees something happened in the morning. Lo nechleku, so what then is the machloket between Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria and Rabbi Akiva? El al shat chipazon, when were they in a mad rush? Okay, what was this madrash? Kiba chepazon. Okay, the pasuk talks about chepazon, being in a madrash. To Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, sava chepazon de Mitzrayim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah thinks that we're talking about the chepazon, the madrash that Egypt was in to get rid of the Jews for who hayah balayla. That was in the middle of the night. Paro in his pajamas in the middle of the night. He got up and said, get out of here. Rabbi Akiva sava chepazon de Israel. We're talking about the Israelites being in a madrash. That was in the day. Now it would seem, says the Beit Halevi, when was, they're arguing about when was the main focus of the miracle? If the main focus was the mad rush that Mitzrayim was in, when Paro said, get up and leave, Uva Midrash, and the Midrash Eater says, Shama lahem paro balayla, hare atem bushutchem, hare atem avadim shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're free, and you're slaves of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he was clearly releasing them at that point. Or Ikar Agula hu bayom b'shat yitziat Yisrael m'mitzrayim. It was in the day when they left Mitzrayim. V'im kein ha-yesh lomar to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah l'shitato. So now we can say Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is consistent. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that the main focus of the redemption was when Paro turned around to them and said, go. Once Paro said, go, they were redeemed. In fact, they didn't leave till the morning is a separate matter. Whereas Rabbi Akiva held, no, they're still there. They're not really redeemed. The fact they were told they can go, but they're not out of there yet. They're still in Mitzrayim. Mishum hachi the shitatosfira late tzachla has kitzim mitzrayim balayla gambalori buya dekol. So, what the Beit Halevi is saying is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah believes something, one thing, with two implications. He believes that the ikka of yitziat mitzrayim was at night, at midnight, when Paro said go. Therefore, he holds that you have to eat the Korban Pesach by midnight. And therefore, he also holds that you have to speak about Yitziat Mitzrayim at night. Whereas Rabbi Akiva said, no, the Ikar of Yitziat Mitzrayim was when they left. That was the next morning. Therefore, you can eat the Korban Pesach till the morning. And therefore, you don't need to mention Yitziat Mitzrayim at night. Because actually, we're interested in the real Yitzhak. And that was in the day. So everything's falling into place and they're consistent opinions. So now we understand why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, even without using the word kol yomei chayecha to include the night, whilst he still believed that you have to say Yitzhak Mitzrayim at night. But he wasn't able to convince the Chachamim, because the Chachamim, you know, said, no, the Ikka is the Yitzhak in the daytime. It was only when he brought the Pasuk and said, look, the Pasuk supports me, that they were able to be convinced that he should mention Yitziat Mitzrayim also at night. Then the Beit HaLevi goes on to say that there's really a fundamental reason why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says the Ikka was at night, and Rabbi Akiva says the Ikka was in the day. But Eshel Omar, the Ikka Plug Tatam, they might be reflecting different positions in the Midrashim. Everybody knows that the Israelites were in Mitzrayim only for 210 years. That's what the Pasuk tells us. Now, if we say that the 400 years, because remember, Brit Bein Habatarim, Avram was told that your descendants are going to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. So how do we work out the 400 years? So according to some Midrashim, you just work out, you start counting from the birth of Yitzchak. The birth of Yitzchak to see in Mitzrayim was 400 years. Imkeil hayagula bismana. If that's the case, Yitzchak Mitzrayim was exactly at the right time. Dunishlam kol asman. That's when the time period was up. 400 years are up. If that's the case, the Ikka of the redemption was in the morning, the daytime. If and get redeemed in the day, the sun's up, it's bright out, redemption has come, the galut is over, the 400 years are up. Afaladat ha-midrash, but according to another medrash, the ha-ge'ula haya be'emtza zman, that in actual fact the redemption was in the middle of the 400 years, that it was only after, and there was still 190 years to go, the al-tanai she-ishlimu otak she-ye'od galut, and it was going to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that the next 190 years would be made up in a future exile, ul-adidu haya ikara gula balayla. Accordingly, the ikar of Gula from Mitzrayim was in the night. Because if you get redeemed at night, it's not bright out. You're still in darkness. You're still in galut. So it's only a partial redemption. You know what? We don't actually need to go into this last observation that he's making. But the point that he's making is, he's really asking the question, why is it that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said that the Ikar Geula was at midnight when Paro told them to go? And why was it that Rabbi Akiva said the Ikar Geula was in the morning when they actually left? It's not as simple as a machloket between, well, what's really leaving Mitzrayim? Is it physically going, or is it being told you're no longer slaves? It's not just that. It's actually when is the shibud completed? In which case you leave in the daytime, as it were, heads held up high. Everybody can see you going because you've served your time. Or are you, as it were, escaping in the night because you know you're going to have to make up the rest of your sentence later? And that's what they're arguing about. So it's just very clever how the Beit HaLevi is tying together there so many things. That's one to finish off. We haven't got time to go through all of this. It's in English, so people can look at it themselves. There's a very important passage in the Sefer Chinuch on this week's Parsha. Sefer Chinuch. We've touched on one or two times. This year we might look at it a little bit more. Sefer Chinuch talks about, looks at each of the 613 mitzvot. With each of the mitzvot, he gives us the source of the mitzvah. He gives us mishar sheha mitzvah. He gives us an explanation of the mitzvah. And then he gives us some of the mitzvot of the details of the mitzvah. In any event, in mitzvah number 16, which is the mitzvah not to break any bones in the Korban Pesach, he gets a little bit distracted. Oh, he points out the reason is because you need to eat it in a regal, royal way. He gets a little bit distracted by saying, you might well ask, why are there so many mitzvot to do with the Korban Pesach? They're all to remind us about Yetziat Mitzrayim. Do you really need so many mitzvot to remind us of Yetziat Mitzrayim? Give us one mitzvah to remind us of Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's plenty. Why do we need so many mitzvot of the same thing? So he's got this as a critical thesis of the Sefer HaChinuch, and he has this notion that basically one of the purposes of the mitzvot is to imbue in us an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says a couple of times in this paragraph that a person is influenced and motivated by what they do. That you can be, you can have the best ideas in the world, but if you're involved in things which are the antithesis of those ideas, you're eventually going to become influenced by negative practices. On the other hand, he says that you might be a person with fairly par of ideas, but if you're always doing the right thing, ultimately you'll get influenced by that. And therefore, things which are really important, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us lots of mitzvot to do with them because he wants it to become part and parcel of who we are. It's something we should always be aware of. So you see, Mitzrayim is such an important fundamental part of Jewish existence, Jewish life, Jewish tradition. So we have to have lots of mitzvot to do with it. But it's an important notion, in general, much more broadly, that the purpose of the mitzvot is to impress certain ideas upon us, and that we are influenced by our activities and by our surroundings, both positively and negatively. So even if, you know, you're not so enthusiastic about something, if you're constantly doing the right thing, that's going to have an impact on you. And likewise, if you are enthusiastic about something, if you're constantly doing the wrong thing, that will have a negative impact on you. So we'll leave it there. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, it will be Parshat Bishalach. That's for in anticipation of Shabbat Shira.